This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Usual Suspects with you till 4 o'clock. Barry here, Nick back in Houston. I'm in Wichita, Jose Partida on the wheels of steel, behind the ones and twos, playing all your favorite hits. You can get in touch with the show, 713-780-ESPN is our number. You can call or text that number, 713-780-3776. Get a hold of us, call, ask questions, talk, whatever you want to do. If your text is worthy, we'll read it. There's a, you know, we try to filter some. We try to get as many as we can on. You can tweet to us. It's a couple different ways, at Parjay94, at the producer Nick, at Barry is funny. All of those will work. Speaking of Twitter, real quick, I want to give a shout out, which I did on Twitter, to Maria Taylor. If you guys don't know who Maria Taylor is, Maria Taylor 7, she works for ESPN, national TV. And she had the dubious honor of interviewing Nick Saban on the field after the game. And Saban's going to Saban, I guess, right? So she asked him about the quarterback situation because that's been the hot topic. I mean, that's been an issue, Jalen Hurts and Tua and who's going to start. And we finally found out Tua got the start. But she did her job. And, of course, Nick Saban had to act like an a-hole when something like this.
Let's go down to Maria with Coach Saban.
All right, Coach, everyone had questions about who was going to start at quarterback when this game started. What answers did you have about your quarterbacks after watching both of them play tonight?
Well, I still like both guys. I think both guys are good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. So quit asking.
I hear you. Over 500 yards of total offense. What did you see from the entire unit then?
Well, I thought when we executed and did what we were supposed to do, we played pretty well. We had way too many penalties in the game. I shot ourselves in the foot a bunch, made a lot of errors on defense. We got a lot of work to do for the challenges ahead.
What a professional response and what professional restraint by Maria Taylor just to say, I hear you, and keep going. I don't know what I would have done in that situation, to be honest with you. Nick, how you handling
something
like that?
My takeaway is that he would have never apologized if she didn't just move on from the situation, right? Because there's two common responses to a situation like that. One, the reporter doesn't let up and harps on that question, which is the question, let's be honest, surrounding Alabama, yep, going into that game and after that game. Because he had the intention of playing Tua for about 20 plays and then making the quarterback switch at any point, regardless of where the game was, regardless of the score, he was going to put Jalen Hurts in at about 20 plays in. And so she could have responded with, no, this is the question to ask and I'm not going to let up. Or she could have moved on. She could have moved on the way she did. And I think that's the reason why Nick Saban was able to apologize. Because can you see Nick Saban apologizing if she was like, no, we want to know what's the deal with this two quarterback situation. We want you to name a starting quarterback. We want to know as much information as possible about both quarterbacks and your approach that you're going to take with them this season. She could have done that, and she didn't.
I also, and I hate to bring this up, and I hate to be this guy, but if it's a dude, do you think he apologizes?
I don't think so either. I was thinking the exact same thing.
I know that's kind of sexist and whatnot. But
I totally agree with you. I totally think if it was a dude, the chances would have at least been minimized.
Yeah, but and good for her, though, because I tell you what, she handled that like a champ, like a pro. It was literally the perfect thing, the perfect response to Nick Saban just being a douche. I mean, him and Pop, but there's a difference. Like Pop is like that, Greg Popovich at the halftime of a Spurs game. But you can tell there's a twinge of playfulness when Pop does it. He's short, but he's like, he's not just a, I mean, Saban was just a dick. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Like, he just was just being an a-hole about the whole thing. And she handled it perfectly. And the thing is like, I'm tired of being asked about it. Okay, well, you know this is your job. So either just say no comment and keep it moving. You don't have to be mean. They're doing their job. You do your job. Or pick a starter, one of the two. But that's the only way this goes away, is you just keep saying no comment and let them ask their questions that bother you and move on, or pick a starter. I mean, it's that simple.
And if there's ever a situation where one is underperforming, it's just going to raise more questions about the two-quarterback system. It's just going to – so let's say Tua starts to slip a little bit. What do you think everybody's going to say? Well, when are you going to start Jalen Hurts? And if Tua continues to do good, people are going to ask, well, what are you going to do with Jalen Hurts? And that's kind of already a spoken situation. We kind of know what's going to happen with Jalen Hurts. And Nick Saban is probably not going to let off the gas in terms of what he's going to do.
Boy, Tua looks so good in that game. I feel like that's your guy. I think Saban just doesn't want to do it to ruffle the feathers of Hurts. But I mean, Tua's the guy. I think there's no doubt.
He kind of alludes to that in the audio. He's like, I don't want to disrespect another quarterback. Yeah. And honestly, if he just named a starting quarterback, I don't find that disrespectful, because that's kind of an expectation going into every football season anyway. But, you know, I guess he's perceiving it as, well, you're trying to get me to say something bad about the other quarterback, which I don't think is the case.
No. I mean, she's just asking the question of who's your starter? I mean, who's the guy? There's a quarterback controversy, competition. And they would just, fans want to know. That's part of, I mean, this happens across the board. Clemson is having this same discussion. So it's not like this is just unique to Alabama. I mean, there's talks that, you know, Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence, both of those guys are going to play against the Aggies. So this isn't anything new. And you could just say, hey, you know what? We're a two quarterback team. Both these, you know, Tua's going to start, but Jalen is going to play. He's just as important. And then that puts it to bed. You don't have to. But rather than do something like that, he just wants to continue to be cantankerous and push back.
Cantankerous. And I like it. I like that. What the hell does that mean?
Just like grumpy, like a grumpy old man.
Okay. Well, here's a little fun fact.
Oh, I love these. Oh,
Nick Saban, his height, as it's listed by Google. How tall do you think he is?
I think he talks like he's 7 foot. But he's probably like 5'9".
He's 5'6" tall, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, my God.
How tall do you think Maria Taylor is?
I would say 5'9".
6'2" tall. So he got scared. That's why he apologized. She was going to whip his ass. She's six feet two inches tall, dude, and he's 5'6". I didn't notice that in the video interview. Did you notice that much of a height difference?
No, I didn't. But if you go to her Twitter, which is Maria Taylor 7, I believe.
That's 8 inches.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's like four.
Did you notice
times
that, Jose?
No, was he standing on a stool?
I have no idea, man. She's 6'2", he's 5'6". First of all, I had no idea Nick Saban was only 5'6".
Me neither.
Did you know that, Jose? Did you know he was 5'6"? I had no clue. He does talk like he's 7'4" tall, doesn't he?
He really does. He talks a big man's talk. But go look at Maria Taylor. Maria Taylor 7 on Twitter. Her background picture is her at the desk, and her. When you can tell she's tall because look at her wingspan. She's got one arm sticking straight out.
Yeah.
She's got a wingspan now. All right. So but
and she looks like she hits the gym. Look at those arms.
Oh yeah, she's fit. She's definitely fit. But good for her, man, because she handled that like a pro. I don't know.
She did.
I probably would have folded under the pressure right then and there if Saban were mean to me. So good for her for handling it, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. We got plenty more to get to. By the way, one programming note. I just got a text from Jong while we were on the air. The Blitz, they're coming in. They're working. They're dedicated. All this crap we talked about them, not true. They, like us, love our listeners.
Now you got to take it all back.
Well, yeah, but, you know, too, they've got this incredible run of being number one in the city of Houston in sports talk radio going. They don't want to ruin that. Of course they're showing up on a Monday. They're going to be here as well. So
I can't wait till AJ walks in and sees me. He's going to be like, we really reached for the bottom of the barrel on this one, huh, guys?
Yeah, yes. Barry's over here at the Chuckle Hunt and
Nixon studio. This show must have sucked.
Course, we just took all of his fodder away. Now he's just gonna have to say what's up.
Exactly.
All right, Bliss takes over at 4. We'll be back right after these messages. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Another breaking ball hit to the corner in left field and gone! Wow! And Alex Bregman has gone deep again. Man! Oh!
Crushed!
That one would have kept going.
That's 100 plus on the exit velo. Thing was gone a step out of the batter's box.
Welcome back to The Usual Suspects. Barry, Nick, and Jose with you. That was the Astros. Alex Bregman, George Springer going back-to-back in yesterday's game. Astros pick up the win 4-2 over the Angels. Split the series at home, dropping the first two to the Angels and then winning the second two. Makes them 4-3 on the current homestand. Right now, playing the Twins, and they are up 3-0. No Jose Altuve in the lineup today. Getting the day off. Marwin Gonzalez playing second base. Tony Kemp hitting second in the lineup. Alex Bregman hitting third. I don't know if you guys even noticed it, but the last couple of days, A.J. Hinch had a kind of an adjustment in the lineup. He's got Altuve hitting second and Bregman hitting third, which I kind of like that as well.
Which kind of goes against what you were – well, I mean, they did kind of take your advice for a while with Bregman at the two spot, right?
Yeah, but as hot as Bregman is and getting Altuve going, especially over the last 7 days, when you look at what Bregman is doing, I mean, he's got four home runs. He's hitting almost 450. And Altuve struggled a little bit in the last week or so. So it gives you some protection for Altuve. Now pitchers are going to have to pitch to him, sandwiched in between Springer and Bregman. So get his bat going just in time for the playoffs. So I don't mind the move. I don't think it's permanent. It won't surprise me in a couple of weeks to see once Altuve gets it going again to see him back in the three hole with Bregman move back up to two. But just having Bregman at the top of the lineup is good. But yeah, man, this team is rolling right now. Did you have a chance to catch any of it this weekend?
Yeah, I did. I like the fact that I guess Garrett Cole was on a 3-game losing streak. So this makes 3 wins in a row for him. So that's good for him to get back in the win column for the third performance in a row. Also, I mean, I don't to Ohtani's defense, I mean, the fact that his velocity dropped so much in the third inning, and Springer said that he noticed it. He said that he there was a noticeable drop off in that third inning, and that's why he knew he was able to get that hit. I mean, is there any defense made for Ohtani considering this is his first game back since June 6th?
I feel like you have to, as a player, you kind of
he was
owe
dealing
it to
with that
team.
Elbow strain and all that.
Yeah, I feel like you kind of owe your team at least the honesty of, look, something's not right, but I'm sure having been out for so long and been injured so much this year, he did, you know, break a record, though. He started his 10th game. He's got 10 home runs. The only other person to start 10 games on the mound and hit 10 home runs is Babe Ruth, so that's good. But I feel like you kind of owe your teammates to go out there and say, look, man, something's wrong. I don't want to go back out there. But I see why he didn't. I mean, could you imagine the pressure of performing and playing, and then you've missed all this time, you come back and you're injured right away again. So if they were in the playoff chase, if they were really in it, I could see where as a teammate for sure, I'd be like, bro, you got to let us know. We can't afford to be dropping any games. But this team is not in it, so I don't think it's that big of a deal. But you're just risking more injury going out there and trying to throw hurt.
Yeah, but I mean, Springer did well. I think Osuna had a perfect inning for his 12th save, I think it was. So there's some positives to pull from this game. I did also like the fact that I thought Carlos Correa got a hit, but Garrett Cole he struck out 9 and he moves past Justin Verlander with 240 strikeouts.
Yeah, those guys are going to be battling, I think, the rest of the year probably for that strikeout lead. By the way, speaking of good positive signs, Brian McCann singled to right today and got an RBI. So having McCann back, having him on this staff along with Maldonado, that's a good sign. Hopefully the Astros are, you know, now that Altuve's back, McCann is back, Springer's in the lineup, Correa, everybody's getting back to normal. Tyler White's picked it up. Gonzalez isn't you know, he's not what he was last year. I don't think he'll ever be. Nobody expected that, but he's not as bad as he was at the beginning of the year. So hopefully this team is rounding into shape. One of the bats that needs to get going, though, Yuli Gurriel. I mean, this is a guy that they're going to count on down the stretch. So he's got to pick it up. 0-59 for his last 17 at bats. That's not going to work. So he's falling in the lineup as well.
Where overall, is that a concern? When is that a concern? Is that soon or is that a concern now?
You know, I think you have to look at if he goes, you know, a couple, 3 weeks, it's a legitimate slump and you have to give him a couple days off and let him figure out what's going on. But he's a professional hitter. He's the guy that I think he'll have his moments where he'll struggle. But overall, I think he's going to be fine. Everybody slumps. Everybody goes through this. I mean, he had a good middle of the year so far. He's just struggling right now, but he'll pick it back up again. I have faith in the fact that when you look at his track record as a Major League Baseball player for the couple of years that he's been here, he's been pretty consistent at the plate. So I think that he'll be fine eventually.
Cool.
He's got to hit his way out of it. It's like anything. You know, in basketball, shooters, when they're in a slump, they have to shoot their way out of it. He just has to get more, better at bats, be more patient
right.
at the plate. And,
as a fan, you have to have more patience in baseball because obviously they don't get as many at-bats as an NBA player would get shots. So I guess it's easier to shoot your way out of a slump than to hit your way out of a slump in the baseball world. But, yeah, I think he'll be fine. I think there's a confidence that comes with Yuli, too, that's kind of unprecedented. He does have a belief in himself. He just needs to get going. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be fine. Other than that, though, not a whole lot that I saw from the baseball world. Of course, I was trying to keep up with it as best I can. But Astros extending their lead a little bit in the division now up to 2.5 games.
Where are you? My bad. I didn't mean to cut
you
off. I guess the MLB has made some changes in terms of the scouting cards that are used by pitchers.
Dude, I saw that. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Pretty interesting the way it went down.
Yeah. So apparently, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because we know I'm not the baseball guy here, but you can't bring as it states in the rule book, you can't bring a foreign substance with you as a pitcher. And I guess they dubbed that scouting card as a foreign substance. I mean, was it really a big deal? I just feel like it's one of those situations where even the umpire knows himself it's a stupid rule to enforce, but he's enforcing it anyway. Kind of like a cop who's enforcing a law that perhaps he doesn't necessarily believe in, but he's enforcing it because that's the law. I feel like that's the situation because I guess it was a Philadelphia pitcher that first pulled out a scouting card and he approached him and said, well, you can't have a foreign substance on you while you're pitching. And that was the basis of him confiscating the scouting card, which I thought was dumb. I don't know where you're at on that.
Yeah, it was Austin Davis on the mound for the Phillies in a game that was already kind of out of hand. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't. But the rule is, you know, obviously you can't bring an emery board or pine tar or anything like that with you, Vaseline or whatever, which is what old school stuff. But what he had on him was just a card on strategies for batters. Like, okay, this Cub, I'm going to pitch this Cub this way. I'm going to pitch. I think it was Javier Baez that maybe was coming to the plate. I don't remember. Addison Russell, that's who it was. But so he's like, all right, how do I want to pitch Addison Russell? He takes a quick glance at his card, puts it back. The rule states, though, that you can't do anything that delays the game. And so he said, while Addison Russell was at the plate taking his practice swings, I glanced at the card, took about a second, a beat or two, put it back in my pocket. And that's when Joe West is an idiot anyways as an umpire. Joe West saw it, comes over, says, let me see that. That's a foreign substance. You can't have that. Now, to his credit, Joe West does not throw him out of the game, but he won't let him have the card that he has that says how to pitch each Cub. Then he says, I'll just let baseball figure it out. Major League Baseball comes out and says, yes, in fact, pitchers can have scouting report cards on them and glance at them as long as they don't hold the game up.
That's the gray area that I kind of wanted to get into, because when is that going to be? Like, at what point are they going to say, all right, now this is taking too long? There's not really a definitive point, really.
No, I think if you're, you know, you have to be smart about it, which I know baseball never will be because they don't seem most major league organizations for some reason can't think with their head. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, if Marwin Gonzalez is a great example. Marwin Gonzalez takes about 9 minutes in between swings. So he'll swing and miss, take a pitch, whatever. He steps out. He completely undresses. He completely puts his clothes back on. He files his nails. He gets a manicure. He gets a pet. Like, it takes forever in between swings. So while he's over there fidgeting and stuff, yeah, you can take a look at that card real quick, put it in your back pocket. Everyone on the field does this nowadays. If you'll notice, outfielders looking inside their hat, they're looking at where they need to be positioned. This isn't a secret. Everybody's doing this. So I don't see why the pitcher would be any different, especially when it's in between pitches and in between at bats. I don't have a problem with it. Now, if you're in, you know, if the guy is at the plate and he's in his stance and he's ready to go and you're staring in at the catcher and then you decide to take your hat off at that point, then it becomes a problem. But that's common sense to me. I don't know.
And I think it's also a situation where it's a good situation because Davis, after the game, was respecting the fact that the analytics department works really hard at that type of information. And I think sometimes as an athlete, when you have an analytics department and they approach you about how you should play, sometimes that ego can get in the way and say, man, you guys don't know what you're talking about. I'm not going to use this analytics. Here's a quote by Davis. Our analytics department works really, really hard to come up with this stuff for us. And I want to use it because they work all day to come up with this. Or come up with the stuff to help get guys out. And if I have an answer to get a guy out, I want to know what that is. I appreciate that coming from from Davis, because a lot of times you'll run into an athlete who doesn't even want to hear the analytics part. And so you have an analytics department who worked really hard and he wanted to use it. And so, yeah, again, I just think it's dumb. I think they should have allowed it. I don't think it should have ever been an issue to begin with. But at the same time, I guess I kind of understand the umpire enforcing the rule when it was in place at the time.
Yeah, and good for baseball for getting it right. They came out and said, yes, in fact, you are allowed to use the scouting report card, so everybody can do what they do as long as it's not delaying the game. So good for them. I think they got it right. I think outside of just ignoring it, Joe West had to take a look at it, but confiscating this card but not throwing him out was the right move until he could figure it out.
So, absolutely.
Good for them. All right, we got a lot more to go. I want to talk about this video that you posted about this lady who just loses her bleep.
It's insane. I got to tweet that out so people can actually watch the video in the commercial break.
Yeah, because you know what? You the way you described it to me is like she got crazy. Man, the star of the show is the old man that lays on the hood of her car.
Yeah.
It's not even the crazy lady. It's the old man. We got to get to that. We got to get to some NFL cuts and a whole lot more. We'll be back right after this. It's the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
This is Nolan Ryan. You're listening to Houston's best sports talk, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Love that song.
Great song.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Usual Suspects, Barry, Nick, and Jose Partida with you until 4 p.m. when the Blitz takes over. If you want to get in touch with the show, 713-780-ESPN is the number, 713-780-3776. Hit us up on Twitter, ParJ94. At the producer, Nick, at Barry is funny. We will read your text. We will read your tweets. Somebody had a question. Did you see last night's Astros game where AJ Hinch was getting interviewed and Keuchel and Verlander and Jose Altuve are just clowning him in the background? It was hilarious. I missed it, of course. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it or not, but
I missed it. I didn't see it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. These guys get along really well, and they love to mess with AJ Hinch and each other. So
yeah, it's easy to have fun when you're winning and you have a good team. So
Justin Verlander was rowing a boat, and then Lance McCullers Jr. was wearing a batter's helmet while Keuchel was like pointing out scenery or something to him. It was pretty funny.
Nice. Somebody texted and said when we were talking about those scouting cards for the pitchers, they had what makes sense, the most sense, is they said a good compromise would be let them review the scouting card before the at-bat. Yeah, I think there's that opportunity, right? So the ball gets, whether it's a strikeout or a hit or whatever, there's that moment where the batter has to walk from the on-deck circle to the plate. That's a great opportunity to look at it. So, I mean, that's when most of them should be doing it anyways.
And it's not cheating. I just don't think it's that big a deal, so.
No, it shouldn't be, at least. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. Now, you have a bone to pick with our ESPN folks. There's a video, which I started watching it. There's a video on the front page of ESPN 97.5 that you're not happy with.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, Ryan Anderson was traded alongside the second round draft pick. Now, I know I'm forgetting his name. I think it's D'Anthony Melton or D'Anthony. Yeah, D'Anthony Melton is his name.
Yeah.
He gets traded alongside Ryan Anderson and that massive $40 million remaining on his contract to the Phoenix Suns. And I thought was a really good trade. For the Houston Rockets. Joel and Raheel were on the air, I believe, Thursday or Friday after it happened. I know Raheel was filling in for you, and they, you know, they were, you know, they did see the fact that they were able to get rid of Ryan Anderson as a positive, but they also felt like D'Anthony Melton was a baller and that was kind of a loss. I thought it was a good trade. But the bigger bone to pick is the fact that it's so obvious. I don't understand why Rockets fans do this. Defending Ryan Anderson time and time again, even when he sucked over and over and over again. And on the front page of ESPN 97.5, there's a tribute video, and I think the first clip is him like posterizing somebody, like on a dunk. Something that will never happen. Something you will never see from Ryan Anderson as a Phoenix Sun. I'm just warning Phoenix right now. You're never going to see that. That guy has made... he's been nothing but a waste of a roster spot since he's become a Houston Rocket. Ever since they brought him alongside Eric Gordon, he's been nothing but a waste of a roster spot, period.
Agreed.
And there's a tribute video on ESPN 97.5. Guys, sorry. I don't see why I'm the only... Why am I the only one happy that he's gone? I just don't get it.
No. Don't get me... Look, listen, I am ecstatic that they were able to do something and get rid of that contract. Don't get me wrong on that. And I do agree that D'Anthony Melton is a good player that they're going to miss. But the problem is you've got to give up something. You've got to make it worthwhile for Phoenix to take on that money, to take on that salary, and to take on, let's face it, a guy that's probably not going to contribute much in the long run. They get Marquise Chris. They get Brandon Knight. Brandon Knight's going to back up Chris Paul. So now you've got a guy, a capable backup for a guy that's been a little bit injury prone. That's good. Marquise Chris has all of the talent in the world, but he's a head case. I mean, I've heard things thrown out about him in Phoenix where they called him a cancer. So you take the good with the bad. You had to do something. I mean, you had to give up something and take on some risk in order to get rid of that Ryan
Anderson
contract.
And if you give up a guy in D'Anthony Melton who... Let's be honest. It's the same P word that Ryan Anderson came along with when the Rockets made the decision to acquire him. It was potential. He had a few seasons where he had good years. He had a great performance, and he was a three-point shooting machine. But when he got to Houston, he just wasn't that case. So if I'm supposed to, everybody, when we were talking about potentially getting rid of Ryan Anderson, everybody thought it was going to be something significantly more than a second-round pick. Everybody thought it was going to be somebody from the core or some big name that was a big part of the success last year and their 65-win season. They thought it was going to be somebody like that. And if you're going to get rid of a guy who was a second-round draft pick, and yes, he has a mid-range shot that he's proven at the college and G League level, but he hasn't proven anything in terms of being able to fit in the system. He is people are kind of enamored by the fact that he does have this wingspan. So when you're a big guy that can kind of shoot, that people are going to be enamored by you because you have a great wingspan. If you're a defensive presence and can shoot the basketball, you're going to be a good fit in a lot of basketball teams, not just the Houston Rockets. So it might be a situation where D'Anthony does well, but I don't blame the Rockets for getting rid of him to get rid of Ryan Anderson is my point.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about the fact that, I mean, you mentioned what Melton has done. One thing he hasn't done is done anything in the NBA. So you don't, I mean, potential is one thing, but it's like we discuss with the Astros all the time. Would you trade a Kyle Tucker or a guy in the minors for a proven commodity in the majors? Absolutely, you do that 99% of the time. There are a few exceptions. And that's what the Rockets did. I mean, they got a commodity in Brandon Knight. They got some backup. Now, of course, he had the ACL injury as well, but they got a backup, for Chris Paul, and they got a guy with a ton of potential. He's just a head case. So we'll see how that works out. But what they did to me, most importantly, is they got rid of that god awful contract. They got rid of their Brock Osweiler, and we saw when the Texans did it. You got to give something to get something. And they did what they had to do. And I kudos to Morey for tricking somebody into take Ryan Anderson. Because to me, that's a big win.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a big win for the Rockets. I don't think it's a massive loss for Phoenix. I mean, you get a guy in DeAnthony Melton that could potentially turn out, and then you have Ryan Anderson who you can have a role for him. But ever since he's been a Houston Rocket, since the 2016 and 2017 season, there's been nothing but a drop off. There was a drop off from the very first season that he got here, and he just hasn't been that guy.
They took a risk. They're 1-for-2 on Pelicans free agents, right?
Yep.
Eric Gordon worked out just fine. Ryan Anderson, not so much, but they were able to shed that contract and save some of that money. Speaking of money, hey, listen, my bookie wants you to know it's football season. Make the games make them a lot more interesting with my bookie. Not just a little, make it a lot more interesting. Just remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. MyBookie is the online destination to get some action on any game you want to play. They're safe. They're reliable. They've been in business for years now. That's why I recommend them, and that's why I'll be using them when I bet online this year. I'm excited about this, man. I've been talking about putting some action on some games. I'm finally going to do it, and I think I made the right choice going with MyBookie because it was important to me that when I win, I want to get paid. And that's what they do. When you win, they pay you. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there like myself, you can even bet on the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will get in each game. It's awesome. You can get to it on your computer or mobile phone. Just Google MyBookie and get your account started today. Right now, they'll match your first deposit dollar for dollar. That's right. I said it. A dollar for dollar match on your deposit. Just make sure you use promo code radio to activate the offer. Just Google MyBookie. That's MyBookie. Don't forget to use your promo code radio. You'll create your account, claim that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie.
Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Welcome back to The Usual Suspects. No Joel Blank today. Taking the day off, doing some family stuff. Filling in his spot, Nick Sciarra. I got out from behind the glass to hang out with me for a couple hours. Jose Partida, nice enough to come in from doing whatever he would be doing right now. I imagine it would involve lotion and some dirty websites. I don't know. I don't know what you do on a Labor Day.
I love the fact that this whole peanut butter, lube, criticisms and jokes have all been relayed to Jose now.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, the producer gets made fun of for pleasuring himself every time a producer produces The Usual Suspects. That's just,
is that
what?
True?
Yep. That's every producer that's produced for this show has got made fun of by either you or Joel Blank for pleasuring themselves. Every single producer.
Is that a pattern?
Me, I'm sure Tyler has been made fun of for that. I'm sure Jose has been made fun of for that.
Actually, Tyler's wasn't self-pleasure. It was something else. But
I don't know.
And we got in trouble for it.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. We won't. Yeah. We won't mention
no,
that.
No, we won't go there again. Nope. Because we certainly don't want any more nasty letters or inciting any riots. What would you be doing right now, Nick, if you weren't working today? Would you be drunk already?
I might, dude. Labor Day. Yeah. I probably might be day drinking. I haven't really, honestly. I've been really good about day drinking. Honestly,
well, that's good.
But
I would
on
probably,
Labor Day.
Yeah, I would probably be into a nap right now. That's how old I am.
There's nothing really on to watch outside the Astros game. I probably would be watching the game a little bit, but not like focusing in on it too much. It would be on in the house in the living room just to have something to hear.
Right.
But other than that, I'd be drinking.
Jose, what would you be doing right now?
Drank.
Besides yourself, what would you be doing?
I'd be sleeping and solely sleeping.
Oh, okay. Sleeping naked?
No.
With one hand? No. All right. All right, couple of news and notes. We got to mention this, obviously, before we get off the air, because it happened this weekend. Big day or big weekend in the NFL for cuts. I won't bore you by reading the entire list of the Texans'
cuts. It's a long list.
Yeah, there's a lot of the names that no one really gives a crap about. The big names to know, obviously, the biggest name was them cutting Shane Lechler, their Hall of Fame punter, got cut. Braxton Miller, also a big name that got cut that I think some people saw coming, but some didn't. So Braxton Miller, especially since receiver was a position that they're pretty thin at right now, but cut Braxton Miller, cut Steven Anderson, tight end, the guy that I really liked, but they must be high on these draft picks that they've got in order to cut Steven Anderson with C.J. Fedorowicz retiring. Ryan Griffin is now the man now at tight end. Also, a surprise somewhat for me, and I think people that follow this team, because they've been enamored with this position, but they cut Jay Prosh, no fullback now on the Texans. So, and then one more of note, they cut David Quisenberry, offensive lineman that they stuck with while he had cancer, and they kept him around and nicely too. By the way, it showed a lot of class on their part to just not cut ties with him while he was going through that. So, eventually. Though I think everybody kind of realized Quisenberry wasn't going to be a long-term solution for them. So he was also on that cut list. Only other thing of note, they put Deontay Foreman on the PUP list, so he'll miss at least 6 weeks.
Right. He'll miss 6 weeks. I mean, in terms of that tight end group, I mean, that was one of the things that I liked about the Brock Osweiler era, because you had, I felt like, a good group of tight ends and Fedorowicz, Anderson and Griffin. So of all the cuts, that's probably, you know, I'm not necessarily bummed, but I did enjoy them. And it was partly because Brock Osweiler couldn't throw for more than 10 yards too. But right. At the same time, they had the most success from their tight ends, from those three, than they've ever had in the past. And I just like tight end play. I'd like to see tight ends incorporated into offenses a lot more, because I feel like if you find the right tight end, you can do some damage. So
yeah. Travis Kelce is proof of that.
Yep.
So. Trevor Daniel, by the way, is the guy that takes over as the punter. He's a rookie. He basically won the job outright.
Yeah, apparently he beat out Shane. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other news and notes from our friend of the show, Sarah Barshop on ESPN. She wrote a couple things. Texans signed 8 players to the practice squad. Again, none of those names really matter. She also pointed out that Justin Reed, the safety, that their third round pick, has been pretty impressive in this preseason, and that even if he's not named the starter over Kareem Jackson, he's going to see significant playing time, which is a good sign, because Kareem Jackson is long in the tooth and probably isn't a long-term solution. Well, not probably. He is not a long-term solution for the Texans at safety. So Justin Reed could be your safety of the future. They seem high on him. What else? We need to get Sarah on the show.
We do.
Yeah, catch up with her about the Texans. But not a ton of surprises come out of Texans camp. One big surprise that happened this weekend, though, was the Khalil Mack trade.
Yeah.
That shocked me a little bit because of where he went. Not the fact that he got traded, because the fact that they hadn't signed him by now, I think let you know that Gruden was not a believer in Khalil Mack, for whether it was a money issue or a football issue. You just knew that if they weren't signing him now, that it probably wasn't going to happen. They end up trading Khalil Mack to the Bears.
Yeah, he gets traded to the Bears, and then he agrees to a contract extension worth, I believe, $141 million. I can't remember the guaranteed number. I want to say somewhere in the ballpark of $70, $80, or maybe even $90 million. So he gets an incredible deal, a deal that he was obviously looking for from Oakland. And a lot of people made the assumption, perhaps rightfully so, that Gruden had a lot to do with it. Well, Gruden kind of defended himself when he was asked about the Khalil Mack trade.
We're going to be second-guessed until the cows come home on this. I understand that. But bottom line is, we did do our due diligence. There was a standoff, and he got a great contract from the Bears, a great contract.
And look, he goes on to say that it wasn't him that was a part of the negotiations. It wasn't him that made the decision to trade him. I personally disagree, but that's what he said. He said the general manager and the owner, Davis, all tried to make a deal with Mac. There was a standoff. They couldn't come to a number or some sort of middle ground, and therefore they gave up on their best player on the team, which I think is absolutely insane. I don't know why they would make that move, but they did. I was actually on record saying, look, calm down, Raider fans. There's no way in hell that they're going to trade away Khalil Mack. And I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong. But what made me feel like the trade was a possibility was when Gruden was like, look, Khalil Mack was on the defense last year and they weren't very good. They'll be, you know, they'll probably just as bad, if not better, without him. And when he said that, that mm-hmm. told me everything I needed to know. John Gruden did not want Khalil Mack on this squad. Period.
Writing's on the wall when you hear stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Sure. They traded, if you weren't aware, so they traded Khalil Mack a second-round pick in 2020 and a conditional fifth-round pick in 2020 for the Bears. First-round picks in 2019 and 2020. So they get two first-rounders and a sixth-rounder in 2019 and a third-rounder in 2020. So they get a haul of draft picks back for Khalil Mack. But as Charlie Polillo pointed out before we came on the air, they get nothing in return that helps them this year.
Right.
So, you know, they must be high on the kid that they drafted behind him. But other than that, man, he signs a deal, like you said, record deal, $90 million guaranteed, $34 million signing bonus. It makes him the second high. He's got the second highest contract in the NFL at $141 million. He immediately just dwarfs Aaron Donald's contract at 135. Yep. I mean, $6 million is a lot. That's a big chunk of change. Only bigger contract right now, according to SpotTrack, in the NFL in 2018 is Matt Ryan's $150 million contract. Khalil Mack is the second highest paid player, higher than Garoppolo, higher than Stafford, higher than Rodgers, higher than Luck. That's amazing to me.
Defensive players are getting paid, and they know that now. So if you're this defensive tackle that, you know, really believe that there's a team out there willing to spend some money on you, it might be legit. We know Aaron Donald got paid. Yep. Now Khalil Mack is another defensive player that got seriously paid. So
don't forget Von Miller. And it used to be when you look at like the top 10 contracts in the NFL, it was nothing but quarterbacks. You might see a running back here or there, you know, a Le'Veon Bell or something like that, or you know, whoever it was back in the day, and Emmitt Smith maybe. When you look at the top 10 now, it's surprising. But it shows you where this game is headed, because tied for number four and number nine on the list of the top 10 contracts are all defensive specialists, defensive ends, pass rushers. I mean, Von Miller, outside linebacker, not a defensive end, but a pass rusher nonetheless. And number 11 on the list is Fletcher Cox. So a lot of defenders in the top 10, 11 in contracts that you're not used to seeing. And it shows you that teams are putting a premium on pass rush, and that because of the way that the NFL has gone to a pass-happy league.
Absolutely, absolutely. Real quick, and we can talk about this on the other side, but I do see a headline.
Uh-oh.
Colin Kaepernick named the face of Nike's 30th anniversary Just Do It campaign. So what does that mean for Colin Kaepernick?
Interesting.
We can talk about that a little bit later, but I wanted to throw that little nugget out there before we went to break.
Yeah, we'll do that. We got a lot more coming up. Two in the books, one to go, plenty more of the big show. Boom! Nailed it! I've been practicing that all day since I knew Joel wasn't here. We didn't do the 90 in the rear, 90 in the front, or whatever. We totally missed that.
I would botch that anyway, so.
But I've been practicing the two in the books, one to go, plenty more of the big show, and I gotta say I nailed it, so. All right, we got a lot more. 1 hour to go, and then the Blitz takes over. We'll be back right after this. It's the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.